Hello, everybody, and welcome to Middle Age Geeks, to episode 26 of Middle Age Geeks, which is your six-month thereabouts of doing the show, which is great. The show where we chat shit about all things geeky surrounding movies, TVs, videos, games, and everything in between. I am one of your hosts, Daz, and I'm joined, as always, by my trusty partner in crime, Philly. How are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good, dude. Thanks. Yeah, pretty good. I'm looking forward to getting into this movie and chatting about some of the news we've had in gaming and movie and TV news this week. So, yeah, it's going to be a good episode.
Yeah, happy days. So, yeah, this week we did our kind of six-month review, as we said we would do to ourselves about the show. And we're going to scale back the retro corner a little bit to allow ourselves to maybe get a bit more time to put into news, maybe at the start, and chat about stuff that that kind of tickles our fancy. Because especially coming into summer, there's always a hell of a lot more news and movies in the gaming and TV sphere. So we're going to try that out, and we're going to we'll just tie in the retro corner to specific maybe movies or game anniversaries or things like that. You know, if you know a Matrix movie is coming out, let's say, and we'll look back at a Matrix game or something like that. It gives us more time to. Yeah, to put time into other aspects of the show. If we want to do any game shows or something in the future. And I hope just to kind of tighten up the episodes as well, because we always want to keep them to around an hour, maybe an hour 15. Or if it's, you know, Rebel Moon Part 2, it might be 3 hours. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, so we'll touch on a bit of news first and foremost. The biggest news of the week, obviously, I think is Joker 2 trailer came out. Which had my alarm set, and 2:30 a.m. I think it launched, and it was everything I hoped. It didn't really give away too much. I think everyone was dying to just see the musical rumors, you know, that were never really confirmed, but just to see like are they going to show visually or audibly? Are they going to showcase any musical scenes in it? And we do get that a little bit. And it's still quite vague that there's still rumors flying around that maybe this is some of these musical segments are, some of them are obviously, I think, inside his head, per se.
Yeah.
And how that ties into the actual narrative. But it looks fantastic. I think Lady Gaga looks really, really good. There's some kind of nice interplay between the two. But yeah, it's still. It looks fantastic. Scratched the itch for me, but I'm dying to see more. How about yourself? What do you think of it?
Yeah, same. I'm one of those people who wanted to wait to find out what the kind of level of, because it was mentioned as a musical, so just to see what the level of it was. Mm. I wonder maybe, as you said, how much of it is inside their heads. You know, I think of Kimiko in The Boys. Did you watch it? You didn't watch season 3 of The Boys?
Only a few episodes, yeah.
She does it's a full singing and dancing thing. Again, it's everybody's choreographed, but it's all inside her head, you know. And those kind of things can be great if they're done properly. They're really, really good, you know. Almost especially the people who are on a fucking mental ward, I mean, it would fit in perfectly.
Yeah.
But it's, yeah, I thought Lady Gaga looked great. I loved the kind of little kind of touch of Harley Quinn makeup we got with the eyes and stuff. I'm really looking forward to it. Like, I love the first one. And even if it went full blown musical, I still think I'd be fucking
so on for that. Absolutely. And like Todd Phillips said, when he was asked about, you know, the rumors of it being a musical, and still the fact that it was even a rumor after the trailer came out, he said, look, you know, music plays a pivotal part in this movie, and he says, as it did in the first movie. Where the Joker is, you know, dancing on the steps and stuff. It's a big part. Music plays a big part in terms of the story, but also the score and all that. And he said it'll make much more sense when you see the film, the whole musical aspect of it, which is even more intriguing. But yeah, I think that's going to be, can't fucking wait for that. But
I was grinning ear to ear when they kind of the end of the trailer. She draws the lipstick on the glass,
brilliant.
And you just see how many smiles, and it's just it's absolutely perfect. It was a great way to sign off the trailer. I was like, yes, I'm fucking dying.
Absolutely, just inventive and clever. Yeah. And you're just going, oh fucking hell! If you've just put that in the trailer, like bring it on, give me a lot more of that. And from really good news about, you know, a trailer and Joker 2 to potentially concerning news that Warner Brothers said Matrix 5 is happening. I couldn't fucking believe it. I swear to God, I thought it was April Fool's when I saw this. And it's still very vague, but there is like Drew Goddard, who I think wrote The Martian and directed like in Cabin in the Woods and can't remember who, some other movie. Hotel at something.
Did he do World War Z? Yeah, he wrote or directed World War Z.
I think he wrote that.
He might have adapted the. Well, he might have adapted it the same way he adapted The Martian. Like, he didn't write The Martian either. Like, he adapted the book.
Oh, Bad Times at El Royale. I think he directed that.
Yeah. That's kind of.
Yeah.
It's a Quentin Tarantino try hard movie.
Yeah.
It's like
looked
it's
from the trailer.
Well acted. Yeah, well acted. John Hamm is fantastic in it. Like, it's like it's well acted. It's got a lot of great people in it, but it feels at times that it's trying to be slick rather than actually hitting that mark. You know, a little bit more style than substance. But still, you know, gorgeous looking. The same with Cabin in the Woods is fucking great. Like, I would hope. It depends on what direction they take it. Like, Lana Wachowski, I think, is executive producing the fifth one.
Yeah.
It depends. Do they have a bunch of people returning? Do they set it a good bit in the future and go, well, look, let's leave all that in the past and let's go to a whole new Matrix
start
on making a whole... Yeah, I mean, could they just start with a new series of movies? You know, if the first one goes down well, it'll be interesting to see how much money the studio invests in it. You know, do they give them a massive budget again, or do they say, look, let's just see how this is received. Let's work on a smaller scale story and see how it's received, you know? So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how exactly it turns out because, you know, I think a lot of people listening to this, and you, I know you, Ildaz, will agree that the fourth one was an abomination of a movie.
That's exactly the word I was thinking in my head the minute you were about to speak. I was like, what's my word for this? A fucking abomination. We're on the fucking, we're telepathically linked. Absolutely. Yeah. That's... hands down, one of the worst and baffling experiences I've had in the cinema. And I really wish we had this podcast. We'll find some way at some point to just do a special 3-hour episode on how fucking awful that movie is. It's just, it's so hilariously bad. But yeah, I'm kind of, I don't know, on one hand, you think like Warner Brothers, the fact that they greenlit and allowed the fourth one to happen, is baffling and fills you with dread. But then on the other hand, you're kind of going, okay, it's once there's like Drew said he would be writing and directing it. And, you know, the directing, it doesn't really have, his directing record is, you know, patchy at best. I think he's only directed like three movies or an episode of like a few episodes of TV. But to give him the reins and like, I would have preferred something along the lines of Daredevil or something, do an 8-part series and just see where you can go with something like that with a decent budget. You can see what you can do on TV with decent budgets these days. But yeah, I'm not holding out any hopes. And even you know, the trailer for Matrix 4 when it came out, even that made you kind of go, okay, yeah, bring it on, let's see. And you can see...
Yeah, it was Jefferson Airplane, wasn't it?
Yeah. You can see how talented editors are in the marketing departments of these studios that can cut together anything to make, polish a turd and all that. But and a final bit of news then that I was looking at was Tim Kring, the Heroes series creator, has said that he is obviously not letting that series die and is planning to fully reboot it with a whole new cast, but hopefully with some returning villains. And I think it was redone in 2015, was Heroes Be Reborn or something like that, which I never even saw. But I was a massive fan of the original series, especially the first season. I think it kind of just fell apart gradually, as most kind of series like that.
We didn't have much superhero stuff out at the time either. So this was a superhero TV show, and it was like, holy shit, you know, they've got a flying dude and everything else. Everybody had these cool powers. But it was so, because we weren't saturated as we are now. But now that it's everywhere, now that the superhero is everywhere, I wonder, is this going to land as much as they hope? You know, like even besides the polished stuff, that with your DC and your Marvel, we're still getting the other side of it with the likes of The Boys and the stuff, you know. So it's, I don't know if the draw will be as big for this as it was when it first came out. But then, like, I mean, 100% I'll check it out, because I really enjoyed the first one, even with some of the hokey special effects that it had. It was a lot of fun, that show. So I'll definitely watch it. What about you? You get stuck into it if it comes out, yeah?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, but you do make a good point that, like, the bar has been raised considerably, like to a completely new level in terms of even the polish of effects in TV shows and the budgets. And, you know, back then, as you said, yeah, it was one of these shows was like, oh, it's cool, you're seeing these people with powers on TV. And you kind of look back at a few clips, and it's like, Jesus Christ, that's fucking it's quite low budget shit they're doing right there, you know. So yeah, I know, I'd welcome it. Like, I think it's a interesting premise, and yeah, bring it on. Fingers crossed it comes out soon and is semi decent with a decent budget and good screenwriting.
Yeah, before we even finish up with the news, there is a couple of small bits of out there news that are kind of related to, actually one of them isn't totally out there, but one of them is, that are related to kind of comics and cartoons. So the first one that's I'm looking forward to is, there is confirmed, I believe, a live action movie from the Ninja Turtles Ronin, Last Ronin thing.
Oh, wow.
It's getting a live action movie, yeah.
Live action.
wow. Yeah. And then, but the other one, which is the more random one, I think, I mean, as I mentioned this to you, is that there's going to be a crossover movie for G.I. Joe.
Oh, yeah. You fucking text me that.
Isn't that just the most fucking random, like, thing? Like,
it just straight away, you kind of, it's weird. It's weird at the same time. You just have thoughts of like, oh, fuck, yeah, that would be interesting. And then, oh, God, no. What? Why? How?
Yeah.
I remember that. That was rumored, I think about 10 years ago, it was just one of those rumors that just floated around after the third Transformers movie that came out, that was fucking so awfully bad, but made, you know, one of those movies that still made $1 billion, the box office. Yeah. So it's still like, oh, what can we tie it in with, you know? And that was rumored, and but at that time the G.I. Joe movies were, maybe, I don't know if they were out yet, but like, yeah, when those, that first G.I. Joe movie came out, it just fucking tanked. And then somehow they made a sequel that was just even worse,
there were some
and
big
did
stars.
Even
like,
yeah, it had stars, but it made no fucking money whatsoever. Yeah, would you watch it?
No,
yeah,
yeah.
Front row.
Yeah, you know I fucking will. You know I will. Like, I mean, it's the ridiculousness of it. You know, these are toys that I grew up with, you know, absolutely adoring. I was a fanatic for Transformers and G.I. Joe, so I probably will go and see it, yeah. But it's just funny that it's just one of these things they won't let die. I think the first Transformers live action movie is really, really good. I really enjoy it. But I think everyone that came after that, Bumblebee was okay, actually. But,
I like Bumblebee.
Apart from that, yeah, Bumblebee was good. But apart from that, the rest of them being hot, stinking garbage. So, we'll see. But that's I just wanted to throw that in as the extra.
Yeah, I forgot about the Transformers one. Jesus, that's great. So, we move on then quickly to, before we get into our review, what have you been playing and watching this week? Anything special?
So, haven't been playing a massive amount. Jumped a little bit into Final Fantasy VII again, but haven't been gaming a whole lot. I've just been kind of poking around at other TV shows and bits and pieces, you know, rewatching old stuff. I did watch episodes 4 and 5 of X-Men 97. Man, holy shit, episode 5 is incredible.
Oh, wow. So money on 3.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, episode 5 is fucking incredible. The jaw hitting the floor right at the end of it. It's like, this is amazing. So good. Apart from that, not a whole lot. I've kind of just been, I started a new, an audio book, because I'm out walking all the time, trying to walk the dog and stuff. It's like, you know what, I'm going to sign up for Audible again. Mm-hmm. So Stephen King's latest book called Holly.
Oh, yeah.
So it's based on Holly Gibney. She's like a character from some of his things. You might know her from Mr. Mercedes and The Outsider and stuff. It bleeds. But she did the character was played by the wonderful Justine Loop in Mr. Mercedes, and she actually does the narrating for the audiobook, which is cool. She's great. She's really good in Mr. Mercedes. She's in Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. Like, she's really, really good.
Cool.
But yeah, no, apart from that, it's just been mostly just keeping the head down. It's been a quiet enough week. I would, just before I pass over to you, there is one more bit of news that I forgot to mention.
Oh, yeah.
And that's that If we are still going in the fall of 2025, there is a date, well, not an exact date, but a release, a calendar area for the new Five Nights at Freddy's movies. Five Nights at Freddy's Part 2 is fall 2025. So
Got to keep it
hopefully
going for
we'll still
that.
be going at that stage, and
Absolutely.
we'll hopefully get our good friend D Ready back on this on the
Oh,
show for that one.
that's fucking brilliant. Bring it on.
So go on, yeah, over to yourself. What have you been getting into the last week?
Not watching that much apart from the movie, and I did see the first two episodes of Fallout, the new Amazon
Oh,
Prime
I forgot. Yeah, I watched that as
show.
well.
Did
Sorry,
you watch that? Yeah.
I watched the first few, yeah.
Yeah, which I'm absolutely fucking loving. Absolutely loving it. I think they've nailed it. From what I've seen so far, the first two episodes, they've nailed it. The music is great. The cast is great. Walton Goggins, I would watch him in anything. I think he's just made for this
Oh,
role.
stop. Yeah, he's
He's
incredible.
oh my God. He's like I haven't seen him in that much, but I remember seeing him when my wife was watching.
Justified.
Justified, yeah, and catching a few episodes and just bits and pieces while I'd maybe be on the couch beside her, and it's just captivating look and but I was just not really into that show that much. But in this, he's just fucking phenomenal as the kind of cowboy actor turned ghoul 200 years later. But it's wonderful. I loved the first episode, especially set up everything so well. Set up the vault life after after nuclear attacks, and it's just you don't want to give too much away, but it just goes places very quickly. And think it's very very graphic, very bloody. Yeah, the music is just fantastic. The set design and just the money they pumped into this make it just look fucking so believable and beautiful.
That's what I was going to say. Mentioned here the set design and in general the props. Like there seems to be a lot of practical stuff in this. Like there's obviously just green screen for any of this stuff, especially with this type of show. But there's so much practical stuff in it as well, which is just fantastic. I love that. But it looks great. Like Walton Goggins is amazing, and his roles in the Tarantino movies fantastic. Like Hateful Eight, I think, is one of my favorite performances of his. But yeah, no, I'm with you on that, Daz. I'm really enjoying it. I'm interested to get stuck into the rest of the episodes. It's great that it's all up there for me to binge watch. I don't have to wait
Yes.
every week, I don't think.
That's where we differ. You love a fucking binge watch, and when I saw like they're dropping it all at once, I hate that. I'm still hark back to the good old days of like when 24 was on TV, Kiefer Sutherland, and that week to week every Tuesday night when there's a cliffhanger and you have to wait a week and you don't fucking want to. You want to watch the next episode right now. But yeah, it's like just having that water cooler office moment where you're having chats about the same episode where. When we chat sometimes about shows that are you might have binged them over a weekend, and if I've fucking madness with kids or something, I might be on episode two telling you about something, and then you might be looking at me, and I could see in your face that you're just like, "Yeah, don't worry about that, man. Wait until you see episode fucking eight or something." You know, it's just like you're miles away. But that kind of stuff is, yeah, it's but it is brilliant, and it's I'm looking forward to seeing it. I just love the fact that it's another game to TV, game to movie success, which is after The Last of Us is fantastic to see. So yeah, hopefully more of that. And what else I've watched? Watched the first hour of Harry Potter with my daughter, who's fucking loving it, which is great. But what we were saying there about practical effects in Fallout, I just noticed that some of the stuff in Harry Potter, just in a CGI thing, and it kind of ties into the movie later on as well, that like so much of it is practical. And if that was made now, it just would not be practical. It would just be all CG, like when they're walking into the hall and all the candles, they just suspended a load of candles on strings or whatever, and it's just fantastic, yeah. So I've been watching that. She's loving that. Playing back into Dragon's Dogma 2, and I inadvertently finished it when I didn't want to,
Oh,
which
really?
was because I was there's still a fair bit of the map like that I haven't ventured out into, but then just follow the main storyline, and it got to a point where I couldn't just stop. It made sense to just. There's urgency in the main mission, so just I'll go to the next point to continue on the mission, and then suddenly you're just fighting the final dragons, like, oh fuck, am I even ready for this? Didn't stock up on any potions or anything and just got stuck in. It was about 30 minutes of madness and finished them. But then, you know, I'm not really going to go into spoilers of the game, but there's potentially numerous endings to the game. So I kind of triggered something where you kind of go back and there's another boss battle. I'm just like, fuck, like, I don't want to do this again. But yeah, and then it's great because there's a way you can finish the game. But then if you get a proper ending, you get into there's an end game part, an extra kind of 5+ hours of stuff. And then if you finish that, I think you can go into a new game plus and start it again, which I'm absolutely going to do because there's so many vocations and stuff that I haven't done at all. Like I was a fighter and then I just became an archer just because of one mission. Just I had to be an archer. So I just said, all right, I'll get a bow or whatever, finish that mission. And then went off on a 5-hour tangent as an archer and became like Legolas from Lord of the Rings. Just like, this is the most amazing thing in the world. But I've only done 2 of, I think there's like 12 or 13 vocations. So I just want to go back and try them all. This game just blown my mind. But yeah, that's what I've been playing. Yeah, so I mean, with that out of the way, we'll move over to our review section. And Phil is going to take us through Alex Garland's Civil War. That I saw last night, and Phil saw during the week. So take us away, Philly.
Cheers, dude. Yeah, this is going to be a good one to get into. We'll say just straight off the top, you know, for anybody who hasn't listened to these before, our reviews are more like discussions, so they're quite spoiler heavy. So what we'll do is we'll do like a synopsis here at the start, and we'll give you our initial thoughts about it, you know, and but without any spoilers, and then we'll get into the kind of the meat of it then, and with loads of juicy spoilers. so yeah, this one is written and directed by Alex Garland, and produced by both of our favorite studios, A24. Mm-hmm. It's in a dystopian future, America, a team of military embedded journalists races against time to reach Washington DC before rebel factions descend upon the White House. Its main star, Kirsten Dunst, is kind of the, I suppose it's an ensemble, but Kirsten Dunst really is the main, with Kaylee Spady and Wagner Mara. I suppose my initial straight off the bat, yeah. I was always going to be a fan, I think, because I'm such a fan of Alex Garland's work. Yeah. I think what he did say, you know, a couple of months ago, he was going to take a step back from directing. I hope that's not permanent because I'm a huge fan. But my initial thing is just, I'm delighted with how much I enjoyed this. I was looking forward to it coming out for a while, and it really did live up to my expectations. What about you?
Yeah, I loved it. When I saw it yesterday, it was late. It was the 10 o'clock show, just squeezing in a viewing before we recorded today. But I had a long day yesterday, like played 2 tennis matches at an open and just had like fucking 4 hours sleep. So it was just like trying to stay, I didn't want to be go into this, you know, with an excuse, you know, if you're just tired or something, just in case you're on the fence. But I went in and loaded up with about 4,000 calories of fucking jellies and pick a mix, get me through it. And yeah, I loved it. Absolutely loved it. I thought it was like straight out of theater. And a few issues with it we get into, but straight out of the cinema was holy fuck, that was really intense, really well paced, flew by, great performances, not too showy, not like performance wise, it was very kind of raw and nuanced. It great music choices that's become a hot topic of ours in recent episodes. Yeah. But yeah, I thought it was just really, really good. But yeah, straight out of the cinema, I was like, geez, I really enjoyed that, but I don't think I ever want to see it again. It's just really, really intense. Yeah, it's just, yeah. It's yeah. Just great. It's, yeah. He's a smashing director. Like, he really is. And writer, but his directing is flawless.
And obviously I have a few gripes with it as well, but the it's doing well for like what is Alex Garland and A24 feature. It's doing well. Like, this is the biggest opening and the biggest opening day that A24 ever had. It made 10 million.
Oh, wow.
On the opening day. Yeah. They're rejected for 25 million, I think, for the weekend. So
yeah, that's brilliant.
That's half of what the budget was, 50 mil. word of mouth for this one.
50 million, was it? Wow, that's great.
Yeah, budget of 50 million and it's already made 25 at the weekend. So hopefully, you know, hopefully it does well in cinema because he deserves it. I think what he's done here is great. But yeah, I suppose we'll get into kind of this more the actual plot itself and the spoilers and the performances. But if you're on the fence or you're looking for something to watch and you're in for something it's not, the trailer might lead you to believe it's kind of a war film, but it is more thriller, political thriller kind of thing. You know, it's tense as fuck. There's some just really great performances. I 100% agree with you, Daz, that so many performances are so understated, and that's what makes them incredible. But it's great. So if you're on the fence, go and check it out. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, let's get into the nitty gritty then, Daz. We kind of kick off and we learn straight off the start of what's happening in this world. So we have Nick Offerman starts off, he's having this speech as president, and we find out that kind of some states have seceded. Like there's kind of Texas and California and stuff have kind of risen up against this fascist government. And very shortly after, we're going to be introduced then to our main protagonist, our main kind of hero, which is Kirsten Dunst playing a journalist named Lee. I don't know about you, Daz. This is my favorite Kirsten Dunst performance. I think I thought Fargo she was incredible in, but this is just wonderful, wonderful performance. I think she's incredible in this.
She is. She just plays that kind of weathered journalist who's like, she just sells it. There's so many shots actually in this movie that of just her face, and she it's that old thing that they tell about actors when they've truly mastered it, like De Niro and stuff like this, where you can just point the camera at them and they can act without any dialogue or any props or anything like that. They can just act through their eyes. There's a couple of shots where you can just see the kind of the madness that she's seen throughout her career. And gotta say, like, you know, it's an intense suspense full movie in terms of the scenarios that they're put in and how it depicts the madness of a very, very potential kind of near future stateside anyway. But it's it just paints this crazy picture, but it's the fact that you see things on news about, you know, these kind of photojournalists and the crazy scenarios that they're put in. But this really, I know it's fictional and all that kind of stuff, but it there's some sequences that you're going, fucking hell, is this actually what they do? Like they're they're right alongside these people combat are in a firefight. Just this combat scenarios. That would, like, that kind of stuff. There's a few sequences in that where it's just like, holy fucking Christ. But Kirsten Dunst is smashing in it, and it's her least. Like, she doesn't really do showy performances, but it's her least grand, you know, performance, least kind of, you know, Oscar bait kind of stuff or anything like that. She's just mesmeric. Like, she really is. Astonishing.
I think what's great as well is that Alex Garland doesn't give her, he doesn't have to massively sell her as this weather journalist, because she's able to play it, as you said, with just the look. You know, it's almost that, you know, they talk about the 1,000-yard stare or whatever that, you know, soldiers get. She's able to pull it off with just the look, and they give you enough through, like, little flashbacks, like a montage of flashbacks. While she's at one stage, just in a part that comes up quite soon after this, she's in the bath, and they give you this flashback of her having the different war scenes that she's at. So they just give you little bits like that. They don't have to have her telling a ton of war stories. Oh, this one time when I was in Granada, or with all these places, they don't have to sell it. She sells it enough on her own, and it's just good writing and good acting. It's really, really good. We find that she works with her partner, Joel, who is played by Wagner Moura. And near the start, we see that they're kind of covering this riot, and there's this massive explosion. I love this scene. This is so early on. It's this big, huge explosion. And when you talk about the use of music, it's the lack of music here. You know, they just have the explosion and you just get fucking silence. You know, it's the aftermath. It's this bomb that's gone off. It's just absolutely, it's absolutely incredible. It's we get to meet Jesse here, played by Kaylee Spaney. And it's just who was She's fantastic brilliant. As well. But it's just it's an incredible scene. I love that. It reminds me. I've taken a little bit back to the scene in Saving Private Ryan. You know,
on the beach
when it's just that fucking silent, and it comes back into the bullets and stuff. But it's just that silence of looking around. Everything's in silence, and it's just shock, and it's just. Yeah, it's great. I love
that effect. That effect is always, well, after Private Ryan, it seemed to be, you know, any kind of action director is going to do it. Like, oh, someone got kicked in the face. Let's do the Private Ryan thing. And it doesn't quite work. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
They treat it as like a ringing in the ears from like disorientation. But when it's depicted here, it is on that effectiveness scale of Private Ryan, where it's just, because the explosion is, again, it's just an impact explosion. It's just, you feel it in the cinema, like IMAX, and you know, the kind of, when the seats kind of rock a little bit, they kind of shake a bit, we just say, you're kind of like, holy fuck. And then, it's just, you could hear a pin drop in the cinema. It's just, it's fantastic. And when it's done right, that kind of, as you say, just taking the sound out, or this slight kind of rumbling you can hear of audio in the bass and trebles, it's fucking brilliant. Like, and when it's done well, when it's done properly, it's just really effective. Like, love it.
It's great. It's a great early scene, because you get to see the calmness in her, you know, because you have, as I said, we get introduced to Kaylee Spaney, who plays a character called Jessie, and she basically wants to do what Kirsten Dunst does. But you see in that scene the difference between the two of them. Like, she's completely shook up by it.
Absolutely.
And Kirsten Dunst is almost ready to jump into action, you know, get the fucking camera out. It's second nature to her, because like, she's fucking battle hardened, you know. But anyway, after that, they end up going back in the hotel, and they're making their plans of what they want to go and do. And we meet Sammy, who's this other journalist played by Stephen McKinley Henderson, who is having a cracking year. That this is Dune 2. We're only in the first few months of the year, so he's having a good year.
He's brilliant.
He's great as well. You know, it's not a massive performance for him, but it's just really, really good. It's mad. Like, you look at, you've got between Kaylee Spaney and Stephen McKinley Henderson and what's her name? Mizuno, Sonoya Mizuno. But there's like six actors in this that are in Devs. Did you ever watch Devs, Alex?
No, Allen? Never saw that.
No, I think that's fantastic. Absolutely love that. Sonoya Mizuno is actually the main, she plays the lead in it. But Nick Offerman is in that as well. He's a fan of working, I think she's been in all his movies. He's a fan of working with the same actors over and over again, which a lot of directors are. What did you think of Kaylee Spaney? Have you seen her in other stuff before?
I've never seen her in anything, actually, at all. But she's very striking. Like, there's a couple of shots when you just get, I love just the bravery of just close-ups of people's faces when they're not talking or anything, and just like selling the scene. But when she's just incredibly likable, very believable character, and there's kind of a rawness to her at the start. That it's nice to see kind of her journey progress through as they go on this road trip, and just see how quickly you get accustomed to a certain way of life, and how quickly that can be ripped apart, as we'll kind of get to later on. But she's brilliant. Had you seen her in anything? She must be in some TV shows or something, right?
I think Devs is the main thing I've seen her in. And she's great in that. Everybody's great in that. Soundtrack of that fucking show is absolutely amazing. It's it's such a striking TV show. It's 100% recommended. I know it's not for everybody, but I definitely recommend it if you're looking for something to watch. That there's only one season as well, so the road trip basically is them kind of going to, they want to get to, as I said in the synopsis, they want to get to Washington, and they reckon that the president's going to be killed. You know, the flow of war, the tide is turning against him. And so, like, he's going to get killed. Someone has to get there and get his interview. And Sammy's kind of warning them off, saying, look, they just killed journalists on site. No one's going to get there. And so they're adamant they want to get there. And Jessie is this massive fan of Lee. Lee thinks that's the end of it. She's going to bed. And it turns out the next morning, she gets up to go to the car. And Jessie's sitting in the car because after Lee went to bed, she obviously was chatting to the lads, and Joel invites her along, and she's not happy about it, but, you know, they go on to do their thing. I think they kind of, the first time we see, you know, and I suppose maybe it's the second time we see that real kind of unbothered, battle hardened thing is when they get to that gas station,
Yeah.
you know, and Jesse sees the hanging bodies at the back in like the car
Yeah.
wash or whatever was left of the car wash, and she goes out to take photos, and one of the fucking the creepy dudes with a fucking assault rifle kind of walks along beside her, and Kirsten Dunst diffuses the situation really by appealing to his nastiness, you know, and gets him to pose with the bodies and stuff. But we see it straight away, the difference there, like she's Jesse's frozen to the spot, whereas Lee
she
is,
forgets to take a photo, yeah.
Yeah, he gets to take a photo, whereas Lee is just like, she's seen this thing a million times before, you know. And it's there's a sadness to that as well. You know, she's obviously
Absolutely.
There, she's going, she follows the two of them because she's worried about Jesse, she's protecting her. But there is the sadness to that that you've seen so
and,
much. They're not even dead, they're just they're
just hanging there, yeah.
On their
it's
way.
Pretty
they're
fucking grotesque.
The lads, yeah,
but
the
like,
they're going to kill. You know,
how much do you need
that
gas?
Makes it even worse,
though. How much do you need gas? Like, just say, will we stop here and just watch it going, fuck no. These fucking crazy dudes at rifles sitting at a gas station, just like, just keep on driving, man. Fucking hell. Terrifying.
Yeah. And that's it. There's this, they kind of go on when they move the next part, they kind of stop for the night at this train yard. They can see there's a battle kind of going over the horizon. They can see the bullets and stuff flying. And this is where they stay overnight. There was actually a part here I wasn't mad in this scene, Daz. I didn't like what they did with Joel, having your man Joel, Wagner Moura's character, hitting on Jesse. They kind of turned him into a bit of a creep there, which I didn't really think fit.
That he brought
with,
her along just because
he
fancied her. Yeah.
Because firstly, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm assuming Wagner Moura is probably my age at least. He's got
it. He's
40.
Yeah.
She's
23 in it.
Jesse's
I think,
23. And that was a bit. I don't know if that was necessary to have that.
At
I mean,
all.
It because the character is so young, and we make a point of being how young and green she is.
Mm.
There was no need for his character to take that direction. I think there was enough enjoyment
it's a bit
in his
sleazy,
character, I think, as
you know?
It was.
Little
yeah,
tad
I don't
bit
think he
sleazy.
Needed, yeah, I don't think it needed his character needed that extra dimension. He's already this guy who's obviously he's an adrenaline junkie, but he's dying for the story, and you know, it's we've already got that side of him that he's this. Well, I don't think we needed. I don't think
no.
you needed that part to make him into this kind of creepy lech, almost. You know,
it doesn't serve any purpose to the story whatsoever. You take it out, you don't lose anything. Yeah.
No, but still, it's still a nice scene. I think I enjoyed them sitting on the couch, you know, looking over the train yard as if they're looking, you know, looking at a sunrise.
Yeah.
You know, and what's to come the next day? But what they're really looking at is okay.
Yeah, yeah.
The shitloads of bullets over that. If that's still happening tomorrow morning, can we go and check it out? Which they do. So the next scene, Daz, I'd love to hear what you thought of the next scene. So this is the kind of skirmish the next day where they get to the action of what they were watching the night before. I felt
yeah.
so wrong.
Fucking oh, it's just like the word that came to mind when I was watching it. Because I was trying to take notes while watching it, and it was impossible until like the last 15 minutes. I was kind of able to take notes, but visceral was the word that just kept coming to mind. That it was just, you could just feel the impact of bullets on concrete like you were wearing headphones or something. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
And that's when we first get a glimpse of this. It's just like a firefight between, you know, three or four, like are they rebels, insurgents? You don't really know. And it's just one of the beauties of the movie is it's more like a human story rather than a political story. It's just, you're there in this kind of skirmish. You don't really know who's who, or nobody's really taking sides. They're just there to document it. But like, they're just standing right with these guys around the corner. And while the guys are leaning out from the corner to, get like shot to pieces at times, and it's just this crazy shootout, but they're just right there popping out, taking shots, popping back in, and it was brilliantly shot. It was just so unnerving. I was just like, fucking how and why and how brave do you have to be to make a choice to do that with your career? I was just kind of going, fucking hell, like, you think we have problems and issues and stuff? You're kind of going, wow, I was really taken aback just by that scene when it just really felt, it really jumped into gear, where it just grabs you by the fucking throat and it's edge of your seat stuff. Yeah. What did you think?
Yeah.
Because it's a quick
enough
scene,
awesome.
but it's fantastic.
Yeah. I almost thought it was a flashback when it first started, and I saw them in all the gear, the press gear, and everything else. I was like, hang on, is this what they fucking do? I thought it was a flashback to something Kirsten Dunst. I was like, hang on a second, no, it's not. It's right now. That's you know, and it's just that they're going through, and they're I suppose they're respectful. They're like they are leaning out to get shots and stuff, but when they're told what to do, they're doing it. So he's like, right, get back in, or just shut up, because they can hear a guy moaning. He's the last guy left alive as they cross up into the building, and it's very much they're doing as they're told. He's telling them to be quiet, they're staying quiet, they're not giving anything away. And I assume, like, if they weren't, there's no way they'd be allowed to come along in these fucking things. But yeah, they go in, and you have that one army guy left who's just begging for his life, or he's just shot, he's the one who's moaning, and he's just killed so unceremoniously.
Ruthlessly,
Like, he's just there lining his pool of his own blood. It's literally just bang, okay, let's just keep moving. It's just,
yeah, but it's the
yeah,
fact
and
that it's his moaning for about a minute as they sneak up the stairs,
yeah.
and that's all you can
Yeah.
hear. No music, no nothing. The sound is on. It's just him going, you know, really like someone's been shot in the gut. That fucking horrible wincing moan. Yeah, and they just walk in, and it's like, are they going to interrogate him? Or no, bang, he's just fucking executed straight away. That
Yeah.
leads into my one of my gripes with this, and it comes down to music choices again. Like, I loved the
Okay.
music in this, music choices, and the score is understated but really good. But there's a bit after they kill this guy, and it just there's this kind of hip hop tune that just
Yeah.
really, really like comes out of nowhere, and it's really harsh, kind of. It just kind of took me out of the movie a little bit, and I kind of know what he's trying to do. Because the scenes that follow it, you know, you see them, you know, having beers and having a laugh, and it's the kind of oh, they can still they're desensitized to it much more than we are after watching that scene, and it's kind of that's what they're kind of trying to show. But the music, I was just like, whoa, that music doesn't work for me at all. It's just maybe the way it's introduced. It just comes on so quickly after this brutal scene where someone's executed. Just. Yeah, I could see what he was trying to do, but for me, it was just like it just kind of made me aware I was watching a movie, and I started just thinking about why he chose that song rather than staying in with the story that was gripping me so much to that point. That was my only issue
Oh
with that.
yeah, I can get you. Yeah, I can get what you're saying. I didn't feel that way. I felt it more. It reminded me almost of Full Metal Jacket. You know, that movie would do that. It would jump in from something horrific into something like fucking Louie Louie or whatever. You know, and that's kind of what I felt with it. So I didn't really feel that. And maybe it's because I also love hip hop. I was into it. But I can get that. Yeah, like from what we had just, it's obviously a massive departure from what we had just seen. We're seeing the shots that she takes of the guy who's dying on the ground, you know, and she leans in to get the photo, and that's just, as you said, visceral. You know, it's great.
Yeah,
Hurts me
just
for because yeah, it's yeah, that was a harsh death for him. Like, you know, because
it
he's
really
when
was.
we cut to that first scene, he's hiding behind the pillar. Like, he's the guy we're gonna wait to see if he's gonna, you know, he gets fucking shot to bits. It's harsh as fuck. Like,
But it's brilliant.
but yeah, they kind of get back on the road. I'll skip past. They go to like a refugee camp place, but it's not really a massive, not massive amount happens there. It's the next place they get to is this kind of sleepy little town, which is wild. Like, they kind of, it's this gorgeous scene. It's really simple scene as they roll into town. It's by, there's like a sprinkler in the garden, and it's just this really gorgeous, lovely scene as the car rolls past, and they're in this town, and they go into this little kind of shop where it's fucking selling clothes and stuff. And he has to ask them, you are aware that there's a big fucking civil war going on outside? And they're like, yeah, we just don't want to
Everyone's just
get
nice and
involved, you
calm in the
know.
town.
Yeah, but then of course when they go outside, you find that there's actually fucking, they do have dudes up on the roofs with fucking guns, because you know, I think no matter how okay, fair enough, there's civil war going on, there's no way every state can remain untouchable. You're not on an island, you know, you're just in a different state. War is going to touch everywhere. I did kind of like the, I thought there was a nice moment with her, with the between Lee and Jesse, with the dress.
Yeah, and taking her picture,
In
yeah.
the shop, yeah, taking her picture and just getting her to smile and
Smile to
stuff,
take
and
it,
I
yeah.
thought it was the, yeah, because it didn't go on for too long. It was just nice. She wasn't, oh my God, don't I look pretty. It was real, just Lee looked sad, you know. But it was, yeah, it was cool.
It was
And
a
then they're
nice
kind of
kind of
back on
light
the road,
moment, yeah. A nice light moment that's
yeah.
not overly saccharine or anything. It's just kind of like, ah, it's, you know, you take it for what it is, and then they, you know, then they move on. But it's a nice little,
Yeah.
it's nice to see her smile.
Yeah, they don't kind of sell it as, oh,
Buddy
That this
buddy.
is her wondering the life she, or the lottery, yeah, the buddy buddy, or oh, is this Lee wondering what the life she could have had or whatever? It's
Yeah.
not. It's just that sadness that Kirsten Dunst is able to bring to it, and we move on. It's a nice moment between the two of them. And then the next part is the Winter Wonderland part, the sniper.
Oh,
I
yeah.
don't know why I just thought this was such a fucking funny, like in a good way, like humorous place to have this to have this shootout, you know.
Yeah,
They
yeah.
kind of they roll up to this place and it's fucking, they can just see it's a winter wonderland place, but there's a dead soldier in the middle of the road. They're like, what the fuck is going on here? So you've got to
Yeah.
just try to proceed slowly. And next thing, the fucking car gets hit, getting hit by bullets. So they kind of
Mm.
swerve and they jump out of the car. And they're kind of yapping, wondering about what's going to go on, happening. And then we just got to see there just happens to be fucking snipers who, God knows how long that sniper has been laying there waiting to
Yeah.
take out the guy who's just been shooting at them.
Mm.
And it's just him and his buddy just sitting there. And they're like, who's in charge? Like, who are you fighting for? What side are you on? They're like, what side?
Shut the
Who's
fuck
in
up, like,
charge? You
just
know,
shut up.
yeah, just shut the fuck up. It's just, what is these two dudes who are just, God knows, you know, there's this feeling of how long have they been lying there? You know, how long has your man been in that house, one waiting for the other to move so
Yeah,
they can
yeah.
take their shot, you know? But it's, yeah, it's a cool little shot.
It's cool seeing. It's cool the way the way they finish that scene where it's you don't get a shot of somebody get them killing the sniper or anything like that. It's just the guy going, "Guys, shut the fuck up," the sniper guy, and then he goes, "Okay, I've got some good news," and that's it. It's just like then scene's over. Obviously, they got him, but yeah, it's a nice little set piece, short, easy, but yeah, it was nice.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, just a shot. And again, it's another thing of, it doesn't have to, as you said, it doesn't have to be this big, massive set. It doesn't have to be, okay, war is fucking one huge army against another huge army. This is literally, they're driving down this fucking dirt road into this, through this place. It's just happen, they just happen to have to go this way. And it's just two dudes there, one dude in the house, you know, and nothing else for miles. Like the war is everywhere, you know, and it's just, yeah. We get more of that in an upcoming scene because they're driving along after they leave this, and two of their mates who we've met earlier on in the movie at the hotel are driving along in the car, who are both journalists, and they're all going to the same place because Joel obviously opened his mouth when he got a few pints in him that that's where they were going. They were going to the front line. And so, yeah, there's this kind of part where they, one of the Asian guy jumps from one car into the other car while the cars are driving, and then Jessie decides she wants to do it as well because it looks like good fun. So she jumps in, and that car takes off. And by the time Lee and Joel and stuff and Sammy catch up to them, the car is empty. They can't find. They go around the bend, like, where the fuck are they? They finally catch up, and the car is empty. And this is where we get one of the scenes from the trailer with Kirsten Dunst in real
Scene I
life
was waiting
husband.
for, like.
Yeah, Jesse Plemons, because in this, in the, you know, this is a super powerful scene, and in this, in the trailer, you're wondering like what exactly is going on. He's asking, "What are you? We're Americans, so really, but what kind of Americans?" You know,
Yeah, it's such
he's
a cutting
unhinged. Yeah,
line, right? It's just it embodies the entire fucking movie that you're just kind of like, yeah, what is going on? What kind of America? Like, it's just, what side is Jesse on? It like, Jesse Plemons, I mean. Yeah, it's he's fucking so he's such an unnerving guy. Just his stare, it just makes you fucking tremble. He's just fucking, you don't want to be typecast as an actor, but fuck me, like I'm sure, like he does comedy and stuff pretty well, but fuck me, he is just, if you want psycho killer without overplaying it, that just looks at you and invokes absolute terror. You'd piss yourself in that scene. If you just saw him, you'd piss your pants straight away.
You see him even when he was younger, when he was in Breaking Bad. He's just this
Oh yeah.
fucking dead-eyed,
Psychopathic
dead-eyed
eyes,
sociopath. You know, it's just, yeah. But it's a great scene. Like, and they're again, you see them, they're dumping all these fucking bodies into a pit, shaking lime and stuff on them, and they're asking, "What American are you?" Da, da, da. And then out of nowhere, just fucking, he has one of the guys on the ground, the one that was in the car with Jesse, blows his head off. It's a proper like fucking jump, like, and then he kills the other guy. Then the Asian guy, I forgot about their names, their characters' names. Yeah, and fucking Jesse ends up in the pit and stuff. It's just, it's, yeah, I think it's they're going in to kind of talk and ask them what's going on before that. Sammy's like, "I'm hanging back. This is bad news. You know, we can't go in there." Da, 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 da. And luckily, Sammy comes to save the day because, you know, fucking Jesse Plemons is about to kill the whole lot of them. and Sammy comes fucking flying in the car and just fucking plows him out of it. Like, but it's such a fucking great scene. There's so much tension. Again, as you said, there's no, it's about the music. No music in this. There's barely any sound. You know, it's just cutting to fucking shots, as you said before, close-ups of faces, seeing Kirsten Dunst's reaction, seeing Jesse's reaction. It's so cleverly done, so simply and cleverly done.
And I think it gives you a sense that no one is safe at any moment in this movie, which I love about movies in general. And it's kind of hard to do when you have certain movies with top billed cast members and stuff like that. But with this, you like the way Jesse kills the first guy, but then when you ask him where each of them are from, and they're like, you know, Florida and, you know, Colorado or whatever, and you just, as the viewer, you don't know. Is that the right answer or the wrong answer? Is it the right side of America or wrong side of America? And you're just like, holy fuck. Like, and he's just, okay, Colorado. And then when he asked the other guy, Joel's friend, he's just like, where are you from? And he's just terrified, breaking down, crying. And he just says, Hong Kong. And then he goes, oh, China. And then just fucking shoots him in the chest straight away. And it's just like, oh my God, how the fuck are they going to get out of here? And it's like in any other movie, you'd be like, oh, well, it's the guy who's not there is going to save the day. But in this, just so engrossed in that scene and just so terrified for them on screen, you just, when Sammy comes out of nowhere in the car, you're just like, oh, fucking thank God. But obviously, like, if you take a step back, it's like, oh, that makes sense that would happen. But yeah, it was, the relief was palpable, to say the least. Brilliant. Yeah, absolutely brilliant.
And the aftermath then is really striking as well, because they escape, obviously, in the car after being shot up, you know, to bits. And it's the reaction in the car that there's a great fucking piece of music to it, that's played over them. And, you know, Jesse is pukes because of just the fucking traumatization that just happens. And then we see Sammy's after being shot. And there's this gorgeous scene. So there's a real folky song. I can't know who it's by, but they're driving and the forest is on fire.
Oh, that's the best
And it's
sequence in the
just,
film.
isn't it? It's absolutely gorgeous. It's just the fucking sparks of fucking flying around the windows and everything of something that should be so completely beautiful. And you see, and it's Sammy is looking at the window, obviously dying, you know, and he's just reaching his hand up and looking at the window.
Forest
And
is
like,
on fire, yeah.
and the forest on fire. It's
And the visuals of that
fucking
sequence,
heartbreaking.
the visuals are mind blowing. And like, that's great. You know, that was, I thought it was wonderful, when you said it was 50 million budget, because I thought this movie looked fantastic. It was a nice mix of, you know, practical and CG. You know, you see even from the trailer, like a bit when early on in the movie when they're driving down, not so much a deserted highway, but the highway with all just burnt out cars and broken out cars everywhere. And like some of them are real and then some of them are CG, but you can't really tell. But the same in the sequence in the forest and the flames. Like, it's some of it's obviously CG, but then a lot of it is practical. And it's up there on screen. It was wonderful. It was just, I could watch, if that sequence was an hour long, you'd watch all of it, every single minute. It's heart wrenching, but visually
Yeah,
gorgeous. And
it's
yeah, that song is
yeah.
fucking beautiful.
Yeah, that's that was a great music choice there. And then they get into, because when they get to where they're going is Charlottesville, is kind of the where before the army kind of move out, they get to Charlottesville. And you know, we find it, then Sammy's dead, and it's so sad. A car, you know, the, like, you just see the fucking cars covered in blood, and Sammy's dead, and it's heartbreaking. And but I think as well, it's also one of the parts that I wasn't a fan of. Well, not parts I wasn't a fan of. It's I think this where the CG looked hokey was those helicopters, those military helicopters, the big
Oh
ones.
yeah. Straight away,
Yeah,
yeah,
that was
that
kind
next
of
scene. Yeah, you're just kind of going,
yeah.
why can't people rent helicopters anymore? They
Is it,
seem to be very hard to
I
put
think,
into a scene.
well, I think that singular one might have been, because they show that first helicopter that's flying out that flies over the river. I think that might have been real. That looked really, really well, good. If it
Because the
wasn't real, then
effect
it's
of the
great visual
blades on the
effects.
water, yeah.
But then when those bigger ones were going over the trees weren't even moving. You know, there
No.
was no, you know, that fucking the amount, because the height they were off the ground, there should have been some downward force,
Yeah,
but
yeah.
it didn't seem to be moving. I just think that was a bit. That was the one part where I thought the CG didn't look great. But like we're finding out here from the other journalist. This is where we see Sonoya Mizuno actually is playing this British journalist. They find out that there's like, oh, you know, the story you've missed, you know, you're not going to get it there in time. the story you're chasing is gone. Like, you're not going to get there in time before they kill the president. You know, they're like, shit, did we come all this way for nothing? You know what they've just fucking gone through. You know, that it's what's his face? Joel is fucking, you can't hear him because the sound of rotor blades is just fucking banging, banging, and he's just screaming because they've gotten this far.
Yeah, that's
They've
another good
lost the
scene as well,
story.
yeah.
You know, yeah, Sammy's dead. You can see them just cleaning the blood from the car. They're gonna clean the blood of the car, and all you can hear is this boom, boom, boom of the rotor blades. And it's again, I've used this word already a couple of times, but it's so raw. You know, it's just, yeah, have they come this far for nothing? Has Sammy died for nothing? You know, that they have won't even get the story that they want to get. It's a great scene. Again, a fairly short scene that they're with this offensive, these guys who are going to run the offensive on DC, but it's a really good one. Yeah, it's the I suppose the next part then is them following them, because they decide to follow the frontline offensive to DC, where Tsunoya Mizuno and her partner are going. And this is where we, I suppose, we see the most consistent amount of action. You know, it's the big build. This is the build up towards the end of the movie. There's something of a passing of the torch here. You know, I felt, you know, we're getting this the difference. Like, Lee has seen so much. You know, Sammy's died. She's seeing a younger version of herself, maybe in Jesse. You know, she's it's but she is shook up now. You know, we at the start we've seen her not fazed by anything, but now this is action. There's fucking tanks, the shit exploding everywhere, and Lee is crouching down behind shit. You know, whereas Jesse is fucking standing up and like putting herself into too much danger trying to get these shots. There's this real passing of the torch kind of moment. And the action shots here are amazing. Like, I mentioned that I wasn't a fan of the those military helicopters, but this that were during the daytime, which, as you know, can make it more difficult to make pull these things off. But the Apache helicopter at nighttime, I thought that looked phenomenal when it
Oh,
comes
when it
down and it
just
fucking
lowers into the
glows.
street above,
Yeah.
really low down into the street above the kind of the guys on the ground and just fucking unloads and a few buildings, you're just kind of going, holy fucking shit. You could definitely feel the might. And again, with IMAX speakers, you feel that might in your fucking seats and your ass vibrating like crazy. But
Yeah,
this is where they pumped obviously a lot of the lot of visual effects to a point, and maybe in terms of explosion stuff, but there's a lot of practical stuff going on there, which is really, really good as well. I mean, I know it's probably a back lot of some Universal or Warner Brothers lot, but it looks fucking, it looks great. Yeah, really, really good.
it does. Yeah, that this whole sequence is like that. It's just they're going. It's them pushing forward, pushing more and more forward. You know, and then like when they get there, the idea is that they're trying to get a shot, like a shot and a quote from the president before he dies. And so they're pushing up and pushing up, and then next thing, the fucking motorcade bursts out. They're trying to make a mistake or an escape, and so you know all the army's fucking attention turns to them, and they're shooting. And of course, it's bulletproof glass, and they're fucking tearing this limo and fucking Secret Service cars apart. But you know, it's a fake escape, and Lee spots that's what it is. Because why would they have tried to escape that way? Surely they would have tried a different way. So she's like, no, it's got to still be inside. So they head into the White House, and some of the army guys end up following behind them, while the rest of them are kind of wondering what the hell happened. And it's straight away. It's just a, you know, this it's mostly unceremonious. You know, they're coming in to kill the president, and that woman who comes out to
Oh,
negotiate the
yeah,
terms
for
with the
God's
president, like,
sake. Yeah.
she's like, I'm just she just comes out. She's like, obviously part of the Secret Service or whatever. She's armed, so I assume she is. And she comes out, we just want to talk about it, negotiate the and they just fucking bam, she's just fucking gone. Just kill her straight
It's
away.
pretty ruthless.
And it's again, there's this firefight then inside the White House, which is the insurgents and the president's men protecting him. And it's just, again, it cuts out to that part. I know I've said it a bunch of times, but again, it's the use of silence. Again, it's just so well done. Jessie is fucking putting herself in the line of danger. She gets right into the middle of a corridor trying to take a photo of the action, and Lee jumps in the way to save her, and she ends up getting a shot, takes a bullet for Jessie. And as she's falling, it's mad, and as she's falling, the camera comes up from Jessie to take a photo of Lee as she dies, which is, it almost reminded me of that Okay, it's not the same because he was a fucking so disgusting sociopath, but of Jake Gyllenhaal in Nightcrawler.
Oh yeah.
You know that he's just your man's dying on the ground and he's just getting the fucking
Get a
camera out
photo,
here
yeah.
because this is what matters, you know. And then obviously Jesse's not that fucking psycho like him, but it was still had that feeling of Jesus, of all the fucking things to come into your head at
Creepy,
that
yeah.
moment. You know, it was automatic take the photo. And so yeah, so Lee lies dead on the ground. They go into the president's office and the lads have him fucking dragged out on the ground and Jesse has her fucking, you know, Jesse has her get ready to get her shot of him getting killed. And it's just that line of him, you know, there's no big speech or all the rest of it. He's just, Joe will ask him like, have you got any, can I get a quote? And he's like, please don't let them kill me. And he goes, that'll do. And they
Yeah.
just fucking, bam, they just fucking blow him away, kill the president. And, you know, Jesse gets her shot. You get to see her face and that's it. It finishes on that note, you know, just what we've been plowing towards this whole time is getting this fucking shot of, you know, the president. And you think because I thought, you know, Nick Offerman is such a big deal, will we have some big standoff with him? Will he have some speech
Yeah.
about, you know, what you're doing is against fucking this, that, and the other? Or will he try and some big stand? But he's not. He's just this shaking man on the ground who doesn't want to lose his life. And there's nothing to it. It's just that's his line. Bam.
That's it. That's your
Dead.
final quote. See you
Yeah.
later.
That's your final quote. And it's just that's all it, you know, and that's the end of the movie. I absolutely loved it. I really, really did. I thought it was great. I didn't have too many beefs with it. I did the part, as I said, some of the CG. I wasn't mad with how they went with Joel, some of the stuff with Joel's character. But for the most part, I think it's a fantastic piece of cinema. I think it's the
Yeah.
budget is well spent, the acting is on point. Yeah, there's not many gripes with it. I don't know. What about you, Des? What are your kind of thoughts that you're left
My,
with after we've
I guess
rejigged it?
my, one of my gripes with the last 15 minutes is, not that I was kind of taken out of it. I just felt like the movie is so much about, it's really about the journey and not the destination. It's really, and that's beautifully put, as you said, when they get to the president and they don't get, because they wanted an interview or something like that, and they just don't really get that. But I found like for up to 50 minutes from the end, it felt like you were with these guys as they were really following and capturing the absolute fucking madness of this civil war. But then that kind of prolonged bit inside the White House felt, at times, it felt that I was watching these photojournalists taking pictures of a movie scene, if you know what I mean.
Okay, right.
More than yeah, I just, that didn't hit home. I just felt maybe that went on maybe a little too long. It just seemed more like a kind of a movie than the rest of it felt like this kind of docu-thriller, something like that. That was my only kind of gripe with the, but I loved how it ended and everything like that. And just leave, I, when that kind of Hollywood moment where she saves her, which
The sacrifice,
narratively works fucking brilliant. But I still think if you're running to push somebody out of the way, you just grab them and just kind of jump with them out of the way. She kind of
Keep with
pushes
them,
her out of the way and just keeps standing there looking at her. And it's just, yeah, that move, that was a bit like, oh yeah, it's a bit Hollywood for me. But
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that. I think I was expecting Lee to die. And I think it's fine that she did. I don't think we need a happy ending for Lee. I think she, but yeah, maybe having her go a different way might have been a thing. Like having her get killed on front of, like you're gonna have her get her killed on front of Jesse, and Jesse still have that immediate reaction to take the shot, and it would
Absolutely,
have had
yeah.
the same impact as her saving Jesse. I don't like, I would agree with that. Yeah, like it works for what they want to do with the script, but I think that yeah, I would have been happy if she still got killed,
Yeah.
but maybe not in that particular way. It
Yeah.
was a bit
Because
tropey.
movies like this, I mean, if like a lesser movie, you would straight away be thinking of, oh yeah, the story's gonna play out that like this is gonna be the handing of passing of the torch and she's going to die and something like that's going to happen. But the movie plays out so, as we say, visceral and raw that I was never even thinking about that until it kind of get to that moment. You go, oh, of course she's going to die. But it's lovely that you're never really aware of that that's coming because it kind of grips you so much. But right, the interesting thing I was thinking about, the my issues with kind of the ending is that the way the movie plays for the first two acts and the way it succeeds so well makes it kind of hard to almost finish it, because it's a movie more about the journey. So it's like, yeah, I just found it was it's once they get to the White House, it's kind of, yeah, it didn't quite hit as hard as I wanted until they get to the present, and the way it ends with that quote is absolutely perfect. But yeah, it's yeah, one of his best movies, I think. I think so. Astonishing.
It's up there with Ex Machina. Now, you know, yeah. I'm probably in the minority, because I'm a huge fan of Annihilation as well.
I wasn't bad.
You know, I love that movie. But it's I would say, yeah, this is up there with Ex Machina for me. Mm. Again, you know, that's another one, a very contained, I mean, it's on a much smaller scale, it's a much more contained performances and stuff. This is a lot different, but it's still, yeah, it's got that feel of it. I'm interested to see what he goes and does next. I mean, he's obviously doing the writing for 28 years later.
Yeah.
So dying to see what happens with that. But the first two movies are great. Obviously the first one's much better, but yeah, be interesting to see what happens with that. But I think this is a success. I'm delighted for A24. And yeah, another fucking movie shot, another great movie from them. It's it was a fun one to cover. And
one that I highly
recommend. Like it's there is, as you said, it gets heavy in action towards the end. But if you're wondering if it's going to be a heavy war movie the whole time, it's not. It's more about tension and these individual set pieces. Mm. It's heart wrenching in moments. It's so well acted. It's fair fucking play to Alex Garland. I'm delighted.
Absolutely. Like I'd give it, I think, four out of five. Like I think it's fantastic for all the reasons you mentioned. And I think it's just interesting that how he went about making this movie, and the political kind of carnage that's happened over in America, and that it never really says what side it's on or whatever. It just kind of plots a straight line pretty much through purposely, which is great.
He purposely did that. He said that as well, that he picked Texas and California particularly for that reason, because you couldn't just have it say California, which is going to be, you know, predominantly Democrats in the States, you know, or you couldn't just have it being one of the southern states like Texas, which is going to be predominantly conservative, you know, and then people
put them together as allies.
Exactly. I said these are people who were standing up against a fascist government. And, you know, I don't even know what I harp on too much more about the movie, but there wasn't too many times where I was watching it where I was thinking, this is far-fetched. You know, the more, you know, obviously Twitter isn't a real place, but if you're on Twitter, you listen to the way people talk about each other from both sides of the political spectrum and how much they love their goddamn guns. You know, look at the gun. It's going to happen, you know.
Oh, like after, you know, the whole storming of the Capitol and stuff like that. I mean, this, you could say this is like two or three stages just beyond that, you know, where it actually just kind of gets out of control. But it's great the way he makes it. It's a movie. It's not about why the war is fought. You're never really told that. It's more about the effects of the war, which is very interesting and clever way to go about a movie like this. And it's a roaring success. Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree. I'll go with the 4 stars as well. Great. Yeah, that's it. That's it for the movie review.
Happy days. Thank you very much. So definitely get out there and see that movie as soon as possible. So yeah, we'll finish up then episode 26 of Middle Age Geeks. Thanks everyone for all the feedback and for liking and sharing and all that. If you have any comments, questions, or want us to tackle anything or tell us what we're getting wrong or right, do hit us up at middleagegeeks@yahoo.com. Anything else from yourself, Philly?
No, that's it. I think if I'm not mistaken, we could even tell people what next week's episode is, because I think isn't this the release of part two of
Rebel Moon part two. What's the Harbinger of something?
The Scar Giver.
What
we're gonna do next week. And it just so happens that the second time Daz is the one that has to talk through a Rebel Moon movie.
Oh, fucking hell,
through,
yeah.
Which is great. I got to take us through this absolutely fantastic movie that I thoroughly enjoyed, and Daz has to take us through Rebel Moon. So yeah, Rebel
Moon.
I might
even watch
two,
it twice.
You know, Yeah, you might if you the first episode, we don't have it on YouTube, but you can listen to it on Spotify if you want to hear our thoughts on the first part, which came out just after Christmas, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Around Christmas, before Christmas. So this is part two. So yeah, this will be one of those episodes where we take the piss out of stuff. So if you're not a fan of that, you might not like it. If you do enjoy hearing us take the piss out of movies, you can be fucking fairly safe bet you're gonna get a laugh out of next week's episode. So yeah, that's about it for me anyway.
Happy days, can't wait for it. Okay, so from me, Daz, and from Phil, that is Hard Out. See you later.
Take it easy. Bye-bye.